Welcome to Menachem Begin, His Life, Legacy, and Uniquely Jewish Statesmanship, a limited series podcast brought to you by Tikva and MeirSoloveitchik.com. This special series is sponsored by the Hart N. and Simona Haston Family Foundation in partnership with the Menachem Begin Heritage Center in Jerusalem. The episodes in this study of Prime Minister Begin's remarkable leadership are drawn from Rabbi Soloveitchik's comprehensive, year-long podcast on the history of the most interesting city in the world, Jerusalem 365. Jerusalem 365 is available at MeirSoloveitchik.com. And now, on to Begin. This is episode number 6, Begin Speaks for Ancient Jerusalem.
As a young boy in Eastern Europe, Menachem Begin would attend services on Yom Kippur with his father in the great synagogue of his community. Begin was taught by his father that the most important prayer of this sacred day was not Kol Nidre or Ne'ilah, but rather the recitation in the Musaf service of the Avodah, the description of the rituals performed by the high priest in the temple on Yom Kippur, as well as the way that those throngs atop the Temple Mount during the time when the temple stood, reacted with awe and veneration when the high priest spoke the name of God. In his elegy for the community, marking 30 years since so many of the Jews with whom he grew up were murdered by the Nazis, Begin described his Yom Kippur childhood experience. I quote from the translation of his speech published in Mosaic, rendered into English by Neil Rogachevsky and Michael Weiner. Begin said, quote, "And on the afternoon of Yom Kippur, when all were fasting and in prayer shawls, not many remained within the walls of the synagogue, but those who stayed studied intensely the Avodah. And my father would insist that especially during the recitation of the Avodah, one should stay and pray, since perhaps the holiness of this prayer equaled the holiness of all the holy prayers of the rest of the year. And the voice of the cantor blended with those of the singers, and the priests and the people standing in the courtyard, when they heard the ineffable name leave the lips of the high priest in holiness and purity, would prostrate themselves and fall on their faces and say, Blessed is the name of his glorious kingdom forever and ever." End quote. It is wondrous to ponder how this young boy would one day be part of a meeting of the Israeli government, serving as a primary voice, urging the leaders of the Jewish state to reunite the Jewish people with ancient Jerusalem. On the first day of the Six-Day War, with a battle with Jordan suddenly breaking out, the opportunity for an IDF move on ancient Jerusalem suddenly presented itself. And the man that vocally made the case within the unity government for such an advance was Menachem Begin, joined by former Palmach leader and Minister of Labor Yigal Alon. Michael Oren describes what occurred, giving us also a fascinating quote from an aide to Eshkol, Colonel Yisrael Lior. Quote, "Despite repeated Israeli requests conveyed through diplomatic channels for a ceasefire, the shelling of outer Tel Aviv in downtown Jerusalem had continued. Dayan, arriving at the Knesset for his own swearing-in ceremony as defense minister, found the building deserted and returned to Tel Aviv. It was not until the early evening that the other ministers managed to get through and, at Begin's request, convene in an underground shelter. Begin's purpose was to discuss the old city, whether Israeli forces should enter it, and what Israel's policy would be if they did. In addition to the military requisites of forcing Hussein to stop the shelling and of defending Mount Scopus, the ministers were seized by the millennial vision of a united Jewish capital. Perhaps the most important cabinet meeting Jerusalem ever had," Colonel Lior wrote, mindful of his own elated state. "As the son of an observant family exterminated in the concentration camps, as the scion of the Jewish people and a citizen of the State of Israel, I could not hold back my soaring emotions." Emotions indeed flared as the ministers, speaking above the basso continuo of incoming shells, spoke their minds. "This is the hour of our political test," Begin opined. "We must attack the old city in response both to the unheeded warnings we sent Hussein as well as to the Jordanian shelling." Alone concurred. "We all want to see the holy city as an indivisible part of Israel, or that Israelis at least have access to the holy places." But Eshkol advised caution. "We have to weigh the diplomatic ramifications of conquering the old city," he said. "Even if we take the West Bank and the old city, we will eventually be forced to leave them." End quote. So Michael Oren writes. And one of the most astonishing aspects of Oren's historical account is the fact that Begin was not joined at this moment in his arguments by members of the Religious Zionist Party in the coalition. Oren further writes, quote, "The National Religious Party's Chaim Moshe Shapira supported Eshkol, declaring, I assume that there will be pressure to internationalize the city, and I, for one, won't oppose the idea. The debate broke down less on ideological than on visceral lines, with Mapai's Zalman Aran seconding Shapira and Mordechai Bentov of the left-wing Mapam siding with Begin. Abba Ibn expressed concern for possible damage to the holy places. In the end, the ministers agreed not to agree, accepting a compromise formula proposed by Eshkol. In view of the situation created in Jerusalem by the Jordanian bombardment, and after warnings were sent to Hussein, an opportunity has perhaps been created to capture the old city. End quote. It is, of course, to Begin's great credit, historically, that he made the case he did, and it is, I believe, one of the great badges of honor that his legacy bears. And in emotionally connecting to and urging the return to ancient Jerusalem, Menachem Begin had keyed into not only a deep connection retained from his childhood, but also one that paralleled what Mota Gur's men on the bus from the Egyptian front to Jerusalem were beginning to feel as well. While originally these men had been disappointed to be moved from the Egyptian front, they suddenly started to sense the approaching sanctity of the city of Jerusalem, and a song began to occur to them.
The Menachem Begin Heritage Center is the national commemoration project honoring and preserving the legacy of Israel's sixth prime minister. The Begin Center houses a library, archives, research center, educational department, and a full museum. Its mission is to pass on to the next generation the principles of Menachem Begin's values-driven leadership and to provide a space to explore what that means in today's complicated world. Visit the Begin Center in the heart of Jerusalem to experience the life and times of Menachem Begin.
Interviewed by Stephen Pressfield for his book Lion's Gate, one of those men, Moshe Milo, described the scene and his own reflections on the origin of Naomi Shemer's song that had taken Israel by storm. Moshe Milo said, quote, "Some in the buses think it is silly to sing Jerusalem of Gold, and I would have agreed with them 2 hours ago. But now we are here. The setting sun is reflecting off the white stones of the city. I am thinking of a story of Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Akiva and his wife were very young, before he was even a rabbi, they were so poor that they had to sleep in a barn. This was 1900 years ago in the first century CE. One morning when Rabbi Akiva awoke, the sun's rays chanced to glisten upon a few stalks of straw that had caught in his wife's hair, shining like gold. Rabbi Akiva was deeply in love with his bride. He felt ashamed that their straits were such that they must take shelter under a roof beside sheep and goats. One day he promised, 'I will get you a Jerusalem of gold.'" End quote. Thus we find a soldier who not only knew well the song, but also profoundly understood the Talmudic origin of it. In this interview, Moshe Milo went on to give his own metaphorical understanding of what the phrase Jerusalem of Gold represents. He further said to Stephen Pressfield, describing his state of mind in 1967, quote, "Here is what I think. I think the word Jerusalem signified to Rabbi Akiva something unattainable, a great prize, like paradise, the ultimate crown and gift of love. Who are we paratroopers on this bus to speak or even to think of such matters? But in many ways, that is what Jerusalem means to us too, even if we seldom give it thought and cannot put it into words. Jerusalem is not a capital of wealth or empire. It is sited upon no river or harbor or overland trade route. It is not a hub of finance or commerce. Fashion or the arts have no place here. Jerusalem possesses no natural resources. Its location is of minimal strategic value. It is not London or Paris, Moscow or New York. Jerusalem is a city of the spirit, a capital of the soul. Let us make pilgrimage there, you and I, just once in our lifetimes. The wretched and the weary, the bereft and the broken in spirit, let these tread Jerusalem's stones for one moment only, and behold, each and every spirit is made whole." End quote. Thus did Moshe Milo describe how for Rabbi Akiva in the Hadrianic era, a return to Jerusalem was unattainable, barred by Rome, reflecting in that moment in 1967 how, for too long, a unity by Jews with ancient Jerusalem had been also unattainable, thanks to Jordan banning Jews from that sacred site. And as he thought of the song Jerusalem of Gold, he began to yearn for the city again. This love for Jerusalem is exactly what Begin communicated in his elegy for his childhood community, expressing how profoundly grateful he was to those he loved, those that were murdered by the Nazis, those that had instituted in him a profound connection to Jerusalem. Begin concluded his elegy with these words, referencing the liturgy of the Avodah of Yom Kippur and how the recitation of it bound Jews to Jerusalem, taking them back in time to the Temple Mount. He said, quote, "And the priests and the people standing in the courtyard of the temple, as if it were the day before yesterday. It's in our spirit. Gratitude to our fathers, gratitude for their love of the land of Israel, gratitude for their prayers, gratitude for their faith in the coming of the Messiah. And even though he may tarry, I nevertheless await him." And then Begin, at the end of his speech, concluded, "And so, with love of Israel, with love for the land of Israel and for Jerusalem, we will sanctify their scattered ashes, elevate their souls in holiness and purity, and carry in our hearts the memory of their love from generation to generation." End quote. Menachem Begin was no doubt feeling the memory of his parents' love for Jerusalem as he made his case to the unity government in that extraordinary meeting during the first day of the Six-Day War. Meanwhile, Moshe Milo, arriving at Jerusalem with his fellow paratroopers, wondered, quote, "What is our mission? We don't know. Why do we hasten to Jerusalem? No one has told us. Yet each man in his heart cannot but feel and ask, can deliverance for David's city be at hand? Is this the hour at last? No one dare speak or even think this. So we sing Jerusalem of gold. I am not the only one who must hide tears." End quote. To read this account is to think of the famous psalm of the return to Zion and its verse, Hazurim b'dima b'rina yiktzoru. Those that sow with tears will reap in joy. And those soldiers singing Jerusalem of gold in tears would sing that song in joy very soon. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.